You're listening to Coach Your Brains Out by Gold Medal Squared. We'd like to thank our newest patron, Riley Salmon. Thank you for supporting the show. If you enjoy the show and can donate a couple bucks, please visit patreon.com/coachyourbrainsout. Welcome to Coach Your Brains Out, the show that explores learning from the top minds in volleyball and beyond. With your hosts, John Mayer, Billy Allen, Andrew Fuller, and Nils Nielsen.
Today, we're lucky to have on the show the current head coach at Fresno State, Jonathan Winder. Jonathan, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me on.
So many, many moons ago, we were teammates for one season at Pepperdine University. I wanted to know what you remember about that freshman year at Pep.
Yeah, it was a great year. You certainly remember winning the national championship. That was definitely at the top of the list. And a lot of coach on ones. I think we had a pretty good team, and everybody was a little bit older. I was a young freshman on the team, and I think like our first side was really good, and then the second side was really competitive and really feisty. And Rick McLaughlin would run the show and set and kick people out of the gym, and and then there was just lots of trash talking in practices. And Marv would weight the score like crazy, and I remember it would be like, you'd have to get five before the other side would get, two or something like that. But of your five, all of them had to be like perfect pass, first ball, side out kills. And so like the standard was just really high. And if you didn't meet the standard, it didn't matter about winning or losing. It was like, if you didn't meet the standard or weren't playing at your best, he was all over you. And so we got some good conditioning in and some dune runs and all that stuff. But yeah, it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, it was a good year. I actually had forgot that Rick McLaughlin, he's now the head coach at UCSB, he would set the second team because there was three setters on the roster, but all three of us were in the lineup with you setting. I was playing on the right and James Kaw playing libero. So we had three setters who were on that first team.
Yeah,
that's got to be pretty rare.
You came in and took John's position. Is that what happened?
Pretty easily.
John decided that he wanted to be an all-world opposite. And doubt for everybody. He was.
I remember going to hearing about Winder. You know, I'd started for 2 years at Pep, and they're like, "Yeah, there's this setter coming in next year." Like, oh, I can't be that good. And then I went to a club tournament, and he's 6'8", and he's mobile, and he's got really good hands. Like, all right, I better figure out another position.
I thought it was remarkable that, well, of course, you're an amazing volleyball player, but that you played libero in the off season, right? In like whatever the fall season, and James had played opposite, and a bunch of other people were playing opposite, and Marv had everybody playing kind of different positions, and then you show up the day after Christmas to start season, and here's your starting lineup. And everybody was playing a different position. You just had a bunch of really good volleyball players and a bunch of size. And you were able to pass really well and, kill a bunch of balls and block everybody. And so I didn't have to dig anything.
No, I think we had a good game plan. It was just set Rooney. But we could go on this all day. I'd go in the old war stories. These are great. But let's get into it. We wanted to get in, since you were one of the best setters in the country and set on the national team, we wanted to take some time breaking down the skill of setting. So to start off, would you just tell us where you'd rank, indoors this is, setting in order of importance? So if you were going to have a draft and you had your OH1, OH2, the two middles, all these positions, where would you rank setter in that draft?
I know all the gold medal squared research and studies that show where these things end up. And I think for me, like in my experiences, both with the guy's side, the girl's side, and then internationally, it's hard. You don't really see too many good, really good teams without a really good setter. You look at the national, semifinals now with the Wisconsin setter is really good. Jenna Gray, of course, is really good at Stanford, and the Baylor setter was really good this year. And and I think the Minnesota setter was good, but kind of injured, and so they had a hard time getting going last night. But it seems like you need to have the OH1 is the primary person. And as I was thinking about this question, I think for me, I would always take one great outside and two medium setters. you know, versus one great setter and two medium outsides. And so I would put the setter probably second or third for me, just because I think that to be really, really good, you have to have a really good setter. You just don't see it too often. I haven't seen it, you know, of course, in the international game, you're not really in a 6-2. You do a little double sub every once in a while, but for the most part, you get pretty limited by the ability of your setter. And so if I wanted to build a championship team, I'd want to make sure I had a setter that could play at a high level.
And to start getting into the fundamentals of setting, can you take us through your setting keys?
Yeah. So of course there's the I guess it depends on who I'm teaching setting to, but I think with you know, the basics, you've got the GMS kind of, you know, fundamentals that I use with the, you know, ball shaped hands, extend to your target and face ball finish target, all that stuff. And but then when it comes to setting or teaching setters in general, I think a lot about balance is a big thing for me, just being under control. I know maybe we'll chat about it a little bit later what I look for in setters, but I think it's really important to move well. And so the keys, kind of one of the first things is making sure that they understand how to move out of serve receive and have all their movement patterns in place. I think it's just really important to be balanced and under control so that you can just use your arms or hands to set the ball. And then kind of the this word came up in setting that I've ended up using a lot as I've taught, and I didn't really use it as a player or think about it as a player, but certainly when I've been teaching setters the last 5-6 years, the word impulse is how we've best described the set, you know, kind of this instinctual force through the ball. And so what I tend to try to do is to get the setters to understand what that feels like, to really get this impulse, this one move through the ball where it feels like they're not really touching the ball and it just kind of, you know, flies out of their hands. And a guy, Terry Danilek, who was the head coach at University of Alberta for a long time and great Canadian player and coach, he kind of brought that up to me, and it just made a lot of sense to me to really describe what does it feel like to get the ball out of your hands really well, because that's kind of the big part of setting for me is just being balanced, and then ultimately your hands are what sets the ball, right? What makes the ball go from point A to point B. And so I think how you finish is critical. And so then we use a couple of keys along the way with you know, having your hands ready, making sure you read the pass. I think, you know, seeing the pass is huge, and just being balanced. And so read the pass is one of them. Getting your feet to the ball. You know, I hear setter or coaches around the country always talk about just getting squared up. And I think that's a part of it. You know, we'll use the right foot pivot, left foot pivot, little jump set, all that stuff. And ultimately it's about, you know, getting your feet around and squared up. Maybe sometimes we'll say get your right foot to the ball, or take the ball over your lead leg, will be something we'll use. Neutral contact, you know, taking it in the same spot every time. And then we talk about just how we finish, you know, this impulse or a fast finish, full finish, palms to target. I'm giving you a bunch of different keys because I think I've seen it connect in a lot of different ways, that when I've tried to be like, hey, you just got to get a neutral contact, it just doesn't always connect with every player. And so I think with setting and teaching volleyball in general, it's not like one size fits all. I think with the words you use, I think you have to teach. And so you have to come up with a variety of ways to, you know, get the point across and get them to understand and feel what you want them to feel. And so I think in general, those are probably some of the general keys that I'll use quite a bit of, but really the foundation is about being balanced and, you know, being under control, and then allowing you just to really use your hands to set the ball and having kind of that one move through the ball so it gets out pretty quick and clean.
How do you know if a key is connected? How do you tell if it's the right one?
Certainly, I think the way the ball comes out of their hands is one thing, and seeing it done, you know, thousands, millions of times, and watching somebody kind of not be able to do it and then start to get closer to the vision of what it's supposed to look like. I think always in my mind, you have to define current reality. You have to know what current reality looks like. You know, you need to know what your setters look like and move like, and then have a vision of what that looks like. And I think the player needs to know that as well. And so showing them on film of somebody doing it really well, or you doing it really well, and so that they have a really clear understanding of where they're trying to go. I think you have to, in order to let go, you have to know where you're going to go, because you're always a little bit of fear and afraid of kind of like, especially with setting, I think you get some more nerves involved with kind of letting go of some of the past movements. And so for me, that's always kind of important. And so when it comes to kind of trying to figure out if they get the key or not, over time, if it's not coming in place and it's not happening, you know, over a bunch of reps, then I'll try to use another key or cue to try to get the same exact message across.
And you mentioned the importance of balance. How do you teach balance? I think you talked about movement patterns. Can you describe what that looks like? Maybe some drills you do to work with your setters?
Yeah, certainly just, I think there's no substitute for the reality of, you know, rotation one entries and right, left, right, you know. And so certainly we'll practice those movements quite a bit. And that was something that I remember doing when I was in eighth grade, ninth grade, when I started setting in high school. I went to play at a club, Balboa Bay Volleyball Club, where Kevin Hansen played, Brian Thornton, and Brandon Taliaferro, a bunch of really good setters. I think at one point when I was on the national team, three of the four setters in the gym, we were all 1 year apart from each other in from Balboa. And I thought that always really just took me back at the level of teaching and consistency that they had over the years just to develop good volleyball players. And so anyways, I remember doing that tons was just the footwork patterns, you know, over and over and over again. And so that was something that always allowed me to have a little bit of control, just understanding my steps and the amount of steps that I'm taking to the ball, and big ones and small ones and stutter steps and all that in between. And so for sure doing that. And then once you get to the ball, is just having a good understanding of what does it feel like to be under control. You know, are you drifting? Like, you know, we have the little TiVo things, and it's like, you took off from here at this line and you landed over here at this line. Okay, why did you do that? What happened here? Clearly there's this massive drift, and then the ball, then kind of seeing it and connecting the outcome. It's like, okay, you drifted 5 feet. The ball went 5 feet wide. There you go. There's your answer. And let's try not to do that anymore. I think that's what we work on in recruiting. I'm sure you have athletes that have some body control.
And how do your keys vary if you're working with a high school player?
Same. Yeah, I don't. I'll do a bunch of clinics and things like that around here. And we did it when I was at Washington. And it's the same fundamentals and keys and concepts. And certainly, like, I'm even looking for that as we recruit. And you're always kind of paying attention to people that are moving the same way. I think it's pretty consistent, you know, at the international level and on the national teams. Are watching these, you know, the NCAA tournament right now, a lot of the great setters are moving really, really similarly. And I think even the better setters in high school do the same stuff, and they just do it more and more and more as they get into college. So I wouldn't change the keys or concepts.
Okay, so when you're with your setters at Fresno State, say day one, and you're just, you know, you have, maybe it's a freshman or a new player, how are you introducing all these concepts and this terminology and these keys? What sort of practice environment is it?
Yeah, I think it's really different for the athlete. This year we had a senior setter. So I took over this program, right? And so I remember with the setters I inherited, it was just one thing at a time. And so I guess to start with, I showed them all five keys, you know, that we use, and kind of went through each, you know, over the course of a couple weeks maybe. But then then kind of just went to square one and was just spending a lot of time on reading the pass and kind of really making sure they're watching the passer's arms and getting a read on where this ball is going to go and that they don't get antsy and kind of freak out, you know, when the pass is coming and can kind of hang out there and really make a good read so they can move well to the ball. And so that is just a lot of time of reps of, you know, the ball coming off of an actual passer as opposed to just off of a toss. And so just going one thing at a time and until they get it, we would move on to the next key. And so, you know, early on, especially when it comes to trying to teach somebody how to see well, it takes a little while. And so that's what I try to do is to go one thing at a time. I played for a coach actually in Poland. That's a great coach. He's the Mariusz Sordiel. He's the coach of Fenerbahce, I think, of the men's team in Turkey right now. But he kind of showed me don't give a ton of feedback to setters in a row. It really like messed me up. And that they would be like, hey, your feet are off. Hey, your hands are off. Oh, the ball's going too wide. You're drifting to your left, drifting to the right. And then all of a sudden I'm everywhere. And like, I couldn't focus on just getting the ball from out of my hands to the hitter. And, cause I was thinking about 80 different things that I needed to do. And, so for me, that was a big lesson of just kind of go one thing at a time. And even if there's other things that are happening that you don't like, or they need to address is, it's important to go one thing at a time. It's hard to kind of come back and, or you get frustrated at the end because all of a sudden you're coming back to something that you thought they knew, but you didn't really focus on it long enough to make it a habit.
Was that coach, the Poland coach, was he doing that because he was trying to coach you that way, or he was trying to show you how ineffective that was to focus on all those things?
Oh, he was coaching me that way.
Oh, yeah. I see.
So it was really frustrating.
Yeah, that sounds not so good. But I don't think it's uncommon.
Like, he knew what he was talking about. He was a great mind, great player, great coach, I think. And, but just in how that was being communicated to me at that point in time, it was really, not an enjoyable process and not helpful for me as a setter.
Yeah. Doesn't sound very effective. How much time do you usually spend each practice working on technique? Say you've already gone through all the keys and, I guess how often each day are you working on technique with your setters?
Yeah, I think, like you guys know, the college game is a little bit different. You get not a lot of time for a certain portion of the off season. And then you get a lot of time at certain other times of the year. So it can really vary. But, like we had, two new setters this year. And so they both would come in this is during the last fall. So during season, you know, they would come in before school would start and set for like an hour, maybe two or three times a week. And, because they were kind of trying to play catch up with understanding the game and how to move and, kind of the keys and fundamentals and, in order to, you know, locate the tempo and, everything a little bit better. And so that was during the season. During practice, you know, once we get the team practice going, I'll probably spend 15, 30 minutes with the setters. And then, before practice usually, and in the off season, it's a ton though. That's probably where I would do it the most is in, you know, for us, it's in the January, February, March, where it's, I don't know, maybe half their time is going to be on setting. And, I don't do a ton of stuff like off of a toss unless I'm really trying to just get one little, get them to understand one thing, you know, and maybe they're not understanding it at all. And so I'll kind of work my way back to going off of a toss, or sometimes I've had them like sit on a box or whatever it is to try to get just kind of one little element in place, or to have them feel one little thing. And, but ultimately trying to go live as much as possible. And because I think it's really different setting into a ring, you know, or setting to somebody who catches it versus setting to a hitter. And same thing, like setting, it's one, like sometimes I'll do one drill where you set to somebody on a box, but then they tip or hit it at the passer who then it, cause then it's pretty important to learn how to set out of tip coverage and out of transition. Again, when you're kind of on the move and things are more random and it's harder to get squared up and to finish to your target and you take the ball a little bit on the left or all these things start happening more, fatigue kicks in. And, so I just think that it's pretty important to kind of get it into that random game-like phase, especially once they kind of have a good understanding of how to move.
And once you guys move into more of the competition part of practice, are you still giving technical feedback to your setters? And if so, what does that feedback sound like?
Yeah, not as much, to be honest. With the once we're competing, again, kind of like from based upon my experiences as a setter, I mean, John was there. Like, I didn't get, I don't remember too many, like, you know, hour, 30 minute, like, setting instructional things with Marv when I was at Pepperdine. I remember he taught me how to back, or he brought Rod Wild in one time to teach me how to back set. And it was like one practice. And then that's what I worked on for the next 6 months. Was just back setting from that one practice. You know, I remember Rick teaching me how to set a high ball in my freshman year. And that was like the one thing. Otherwise, it was really just kind of like maybe little subtle reminders along the way. But for the most part, I think you kind of have to learn and explore it. And so for me, what I try to do is to have them have one thing. You've got one thing you're working on today as a volleyball player, as a setter, and then we'll track it. You know, I'll try to give you feedback on it throughout, kind of check in on it, ask you how you're doing with it throughout practice. And then after practice or in matches, I can say, hey, you know, 18 out of 50 times you had your hands ready when the passer was passing the ball. So you were ready to receive that pass. And can we get it to, you know, 20 out of 50 in the next practice? And so they're just trying to track it over time and until it kind of becomes a habit.
And what do you do to develop the connection between setters and hitters?
You get them talking to each other. I've actually thought it was harder. It's been harder with girls. Guys are usually a little bit more blunt and just kind of like, dude, that set sucked, you know, or set it higher, set it lower. With girls, there's a little bit more to it. It, at least in my experiences in the last 5 or 6 years, where there's a little bit more emotion attached with it of like, she doesn't like me. And, she doesn't think I'm a good setter or whatever it might be. And, so there's just a little bit more to it, I think, with the communication there. And so certainly there's like a feedback loop, you know, you try to get the hitters and really to understand their timing and rhythm and make sure they are dialed in with, you know, when the ball's in the setter's hands, I'm on this step, I'm you know, my hard second step or the soft second step, whatever it is. And so they have to know that. Otherwise, I don't feel that they have the right to give feedback. And so when hitters just kind of roll out there and, you know, day one as a freshman, you're telling a senior setter, set it higher, lower, faster, whatever, but you have no clue what you're doing. I don't see that being productive and helpful for anybody. And so it's important that they know how they move as hitters so that they can give proper feedback and that they keep it pretty specific. And I thought it's best when they do it after they do something well. So like if the set's low and inside and they hit it and kill it, they can say, hey, you know, push it out a little wider. Okay, I get it, you know? And then, but if they, if I set it low and inside and you hit it in the bottom of the net and then you tell me and yell at me and say, hey, higher, 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 you know, and you're kind of blowing up the setter, I think that's not helpful for the setter. It's not helpful for their confidence. And, so I'm not a big fan of that because I remember Marv talking about it one time. You don't really want the passers to be, or the setter to be yelling at the passer, like pass it better, and the hitters to be yelling at the setter to set it better. And it just gets out of control.
How would you respond when you had hitters, say higher or whatever, give you critical feedback?
I was a little up and down in my career, I think, with that. And, I think as it went on, like you have to better, the better setters that are more confident and can just kind of take it to a certain degree and, they're okay carrying the burden, you know, they're not as stressed or worried. And so they can carry more of the burden and say, hey, that was my bad. That was not a good set. Even if it was a great set, right? They could kind of like lighten the load for the hitters. And I think that's a really good quality of setters when they can do that. For me, like I remember I'd get after hitters sometimes if they were to say that stuff like that, then I would just say, well, I'm just not going to set you again. Like, why would I set you if you're just whining about my sets? And that doesn't, you know, that's probably not too helpful, but I would definitely be a little bit feisty with how I would communicate from time to time with hitters, especially when it wasn't, when I didn't feel like it was productive. And the other part I would say is, like, I know as I don't know, as certainly as I went on in my career, you know, if it's a good set, like the second it touches your hands, probably even before it comes out of your hands, you know, if it's going to be in the target or not, you know, or at least in the zone where they can really do something with it. And so you don't really need a whole lot of feedback, in my opinion. Maybe early on you need to, but like, I would be pretty surprised if like Jenna Gray and Catherine Plummer are still working on how to, you know, figure out what is her set like. You know, they've both been setting each other for a really long time. And so as it kind of moves forward, I don't think you really need a ton of feedback, you know, because I think everybody kind of knows what that set's like.
I remember when I made the switch when you came to Pepperdine from going from setter to hitter, I was like, I am never going to complain about a set. If you set me wherever it goes, like, I'm still like, after going through a couple of years of hearing about it, it's like, I will never give any sort of negative, like, more just like, thanks for setting me.
Yeah,
I don't think you really understand it as a hitter. You don't understand it unless you've been through it, and you know how hard it's really hard to locate the ball and as often as you want to, as accurately as you want to.
Yeah, I think especially when you're young or kind of figuring things out, it can be really stressful to get, you're getting feedback from everywhere. You know, you're getting it from your coach, you're getting it from, whether it's verbal or nonverbal, sometimes you just see the reaction in your hitters, you know, and then that like deflates you, and or you see the fans, or you set a ball and then everybody's screaming that it's supposed to be a double, you know, and the ref doesn't call it, or the ref calls a double. Like, I know from my experience, setters I've coached have had a really hard time when they do get called for a double. I was watching the Baylor game, and the setter there seems to be really, really a nice player, and she doubled a couple balls, or it was a little bit, you know, miss timings, and all of a sudden you could see the confidence and kind of the stress kind of go kick in, and that becomes really difficult to manage, I think, as a coach and as a team. And then all of a sudden what you've done for months gets thrown off, and that's not very helpful. So yeah. A little bit aware of those things.
Right. What about the other way for setters who are communicating to hitters? What do you recommend, say, if an attacker is really struggling, or even if they're going good, what do you have your setters focus on when they communicate?
Yeah, I think that kind of like I mentioned before, with trying to take accountability and responsibility as much as possible, because it kind of goes both ways, that I think like on a team or in these got all these relationships that are on the court, right? And somebody's going to be a little bit more confident. Somebody's going to be a little bit more mature than somebody else on the team. We've got six individuals out there, right? And so not everybody's going to be at the same confidence level, maturity level, the entire match, the entire practice, right? It's going to be a little up and a little down. And so I think for setters, when they can take on more responsibility, I think that's really helpful. When they can lighten the load of the hitters, who can also feel stressed, like when they're hitting the ball out of bounds or struggling, that they can say, hey, I'm going to keep setting you. That's my bad on that set. Like, you know, that was a great swing, even if though it was 25 feet out of bounds. Like, you know, you can just kind of ignore the bad stuff and stay focused on the positive and continuing to connect with and give high fives and pull for your hitters that aren't doing very well. And the ones that are doing well, you just keep building them up. You know, nobody can stop you. I'm going to set you every freaking ball here. You keep swinging as hard as you can, and I'm going to find you, you know, and just kind of continuing to invest in them and believe in them and make sure they know that you're not going anywhere, and you're going to, yeah, hey, I might set this person one or two times, but it's because I want to set you at the end of the game and get you the kill to win the match, kind of thing. So I think I like telling people when I'm going to set them, and sometimes I like telling them I'm going to set them and then don't set them, just to make sure they're approaching hard.
Yeah,
especially with middles.
Yeah, you always got to tell middles you're going to set them. We want to get into tactics a little bit. How important do you think deception is in setting?
Yeah, I'm probably more a fan of decision making than deception. I think the deception is important, but it happens, I think, just with when you're just a good setter and when you move really well, you know, when you get squared up, when you get the ball in the same spot on top of your head, like all of a sudden you're being deceptive just by moving well, right? And it's not so much about delay setting or kind of holding on to the ball for a long time or something like that. I think just the better you move, the more deceptive it is. It just becomes really difficult to see that ball fly out of your hands. And when you have a good high contact and get that impulse, that ball flying out, it's just, I think that's really deceptive. And so I don't spend too much time on it. I probably a little bit more on decision making, and then also just the ability to go against the flow and the strength to kind of move the ball around and set it wherever you want to set it. You know, regardless of the pass, that would be the ideal. Being deceptive is just being able to make it look like I'm going to set one thing. You know, we always square up to the left side, so kind of always looking like I'm going to set a quick or set a go, but then ultimately I set whoever I want. But that's really just about moving really well.
That was part one of our conversation with Jonathan Winder. Join us next week for more setting talk here on Coach Your Brains Out by Gold Medal Squared.